SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand. Marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go. Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hello and welcome to SBS On The Money. It's Friday the 29th of May. I'm Stephanie Youssef filling in for Ricardo Gonçalves. Today, the Australian share market reversed yesterday's $45 billion wipeout, closing 1.62% higher at 8,731.7. That's as US and Iranian negotiators reached a tentative agreement to extend the ceasefire by another 60 days and start a new round of talks on Iran's nuclear program. That helped to lift most of the sectors, with materials the best performer as precious metal prices surged, followed by IT stocks. While energy and utilities fell, that of course was largely due to the falling oil prices, Brent crude slipping nearly 5% compared to yesterday. It's currently at about $92.50 a barrel. For more on this, I spoke with Opal Capital Management Chief Investment Officer, Omka Joshi. So Omka, after losing $45 billion yesterday, the ASX 200 is surging today. What's driving the market?
I think we're just seeing renewed optimism at the moment that there will be some sort of resolution to the ongoing tensions in Iran and with the US. So that's really where the optimism's coming from. There's constantly new headlines of it. And so as we get closer and closer to potentially a resolution, the market is starting to price that in ahead of time.
But we've been here before where there's headlines about the US nearing a peace deal and the markets go up and then there's an escalation and they go down. And now it looks like there's an agreement on a 60-day ceasefire agreement, but Trump's yet to sign it. With all that back and forth and the volatility since the war broke out in March, why do you think investors are still trusting everything that's coming out of the White House and not thinking that this could just be another taco moment?
So I think it's becoming pretty clear that there's been plenty of opportunity for this conflict to escalate, and Trump has definitely not taken that opportunity to escalate. So it's starting to become pretty clear that this is not going to go back to a hot conflict. That doesn't mean we're going to have a resolution very quickly, but it does mean that maybe the worst case will be avoided. Having said all of that, there is potentially a bit of complacency in markets in that as they keep rising, the risk is also ever present. So it's not like it's all resolved until it's resolved. But at the same time, there isn't any obvious issue just yet.
The hopes of the ceasefire overshadowed the inflation news out of the US, which rose to a three-year high. Was it what markets were expecting? And what does it mean for the Fed under the new leadership of Kevin Warsh?
So I think there is some expectation that we are going to see inflation stay higher for longer compared to where we were at the start of the year. And that really is driven by what's happening with oil prices and effectively ultimately refined products and fuels as well. And so that's not a complete surprise as such. So we're starting to see that come through the system. That does mean that the potential for rate cuts does become a bit trickier. But I don't necessarily think that means we are going to start raising rates as such, especially in the US, given that you do have Warsh starting and he's definitely a bit more dovish, and that's part of the reason that he's getting that role in the first place.
Some huge AI news today with Anthropic soaring to a nearly $1 trillion valuation, surpassing OpenAI as the most valuable AI startup. Does that surprise you? And what does it mean for the wider AI landscape?
So the actual valuation, I mean, it's very hard to really comment about it when we can't actually see the actual specific numbers behind it. There's obviously been very big valuations in the AI space. I think we're going to see more and more of these large valuations, and that is obviously a space where there's a lot going on. There's going to be more going on over the future years. So it's not a complete surprise as such. You know, it is more of the same. I expect more of that in the future years as well.
And finally, where are the opportunities for investors?
So I think it always pays to be bottom up, company specific, look for good opportunities, be aware of the overall climate as well. So don't necessarily get caught up in some of the hot sectors or the hot trades, and really just come back to bottom up fundamentals and pay attention to what you're actually buying and understand what you're purchasing.
That was Omka Joshi from Opal Capital Management. Now to the Australian Financial Review's 2026 Rich List, which has seen the combined wealth of Australia's 200 richest people surge to more than $700 billion, led again by mining magnate Gina Rinehart. Meanwhile, property tycoon Harry Triguboff replaced miner Andrew Forrest in second place as Twiggy slipped to eighth following his costly divorce, his former wife Nicola outranking him at number seven. But there's also many surprise additions on this year's list, as well as some migrant success stories and more female entrepreneurs. Earlier, I spoke with Hannah Tattersall, the deputy editor of the Fin Review's Rich List. So, Hannah, are there any surprising new faces on the list this year? And what does it say about the maybe Australian landscape that almost the entire Rich List is now made up of billionaires?
Yeah, it's really interesting, hey. I think every year, the rich get richer. But certainly this year, out of 200 rankings on the list, 178 billionaires, which was, quite a shock. I think there's the usual faces that are always on there in mining and property. So we've got, Gina Rinehart topping the list, and Harry Triguboff is the Australia's richest man at number two. But then I think this year, we've really tried to dig into some of the hidden women behind the men as well, because often they've been left off the list. And when you dig a little deeper, you find that actually there's, a partner who's been there the whole time, who's often, on the board of the company or very much involved in the company, and has just sort of been left off the list for whatever reason. And I think this year, in terms of new faces, we've got some really interesting people. We've got Katrina Leslie, who founded a company called Swipe Jobs, which uses AI to help job seekers find jobs. And she is on the list for the first time as a billionaire. And then we've also got Carol and Andre Estefan, who run the chain of chicken shops called El Janna across Sydney, and they're expanding, throughout Australia and overseas. And they were a large stake in the company was sold to private equity in 2025, which is how they ended up on the rich list this year.
As you mentioned, some of the big mining names, their wealth actually continued to surge this year, while some of the biggest tech fortunes actually have fallen so sharply. Why is that?
Because of the way that we work out the valuations for people, if you've run a listed company, a company that's, listed on the ASX or the NASDAQ, then obviously the company's value is very much tied up into the share market. And because we saw this huge dip in tech stocks between sort of April 2025 and April 2026. By the time we closed off our valuations, the Atlassian share price, for example, had dropped significantly. So the wealth of founders Mike Cannon-Brookes, and his former wife Annie Cannon-Brookes, and his co-founder Scott Farquhar and his wife Kim Jackson, obviously were tied up in those shares. So their wealth plummeted. But such is the nature of these things that if we had cut off the valuations, perhaps even just a couple of weeks later, then their wealth may very well not have dropped by that much.
So let's talk AI. It's all anyone seems to be talking about this past year, and it's certainly created several new billionaires. Is AI becoming Australia's next major wealth engine?
I think it's really interesting. I think, the reason that the Companies like Atlassian lost so much value was because the shareholders were worried that AI was dismantling the whole business model for companies like that. So AI has kind of been this threat this year on one hand, but then in the other hand, it's obviously created all these new companies. In particular, the rise of AI data centers, which we're starting to see and hear about more and more in the news. And so there's a couple of rich listers this year who really saw the trend for these data centers and sort of got in early. So we've got Oliver Curtis, who has founded a company called Firmus with his cousin, and this is all about building relationships with NVIDIA, which is the most valuable company in the world, which makes chips. And so his company is sort of gearing up to be the hottest IPO of 2026. And then you've got Dan and Will Roberts, who founded a company called iREN some years ago. And they also, thanks to AI data centers, have seen their wealth just increase significantly due to the demand or perceived demand for, data centers in the future.
Marriage breakdowns have reshaped the top rankings again this year. How much do personal relationships now influence Australia's wealth landscape?
Yeah, it's really interesting with a lot of the the rich families on the list. There's these dynasties of family wealth and generational wealth over the years. I think one of the the biggest disruptors to the rich list in recent years was the divorce of Andrew Forrest and Nicola Forrest. Who separated and therefore separated their fortune as well. So much so that Nicola Forrest is now ahead of Andrew Forrest on the rich list. We've also seen the breakup of Mike Cannon-Brookes and Annie Cannon-Brookes, who are now separated in the rankings. They're not divorced as of yet, and we're not sure how they've separated their assets and how that will happen. Obviously, we can't know everything. A lot of this stuff is private, but certainly that has also seen a redistribution of wealth. And then you've got old family relationships and breakdowns like the Reinhardts, who goes back generations and generations. But you've got family feuds and you've got all these histories and people who've married into other wealth. So the list becomes there's so many connections on the list actually. If you dig a little deeper, you can see how some of these people are connected, way back, and remain connected today.
You mentioned the Aljana founders earlier. Can you tell us about some of the other migrant success stories on the list and how have they helped reshape Australia's industries?
Yeah, sure. I think the migrant success stories are really what makes the rich list. I think sometimes we can get caught up in the numbers or the wealth and sort of think, oh wow, it's the wealth is owned by just a few people in Australia and it's always the same old faces. But it really is a celebration of entrepreneurship in Australia, and a lot of that is migrant success stories, going back to people like Frank Lowy years and years ago. But you also have these new faces coming through. So there's some brothers from who have a Lebanese background, Anthony Hazouri, and oh, sorry, cousins and his cousin, and they founded a property company called Revelop, and they're really sort of changing the property landscape in Sydney's western suburbs where they grew up, and they debut on the list this year. As mentioned, you've got the Aljana Chicken Shop founders who are of Lebanese heritage. There's always a huge number of Greek, rich listers. I guess, in Australia, we have a lot of members of the Greek community. And this year, we also have a new Greek entrant in a young couple called Georgia Kontos and Daniel Kontos, who founded a retail brand called White Fox Boutique. Which is actually not a boutique at all. It's been, this crazy success story, expanding internationally. They've got these large warehouses now in the UK and the US. And it sort of started as a small brand on eBay and selling hoodies. And now, every tween around the world seems to own a White Fox hoodie. And that's, they were high school sweethearts from Sydney who founded this fashion empire.
Female representation has increased again this year. Are we seeing real progress for women in business leadership and entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think we are. I think, there's always more men on the list, and we still have a long way to go to try and bring more women to the forefront of the rich list. I think one thing that remains a challenge is that women often don't like to talk about their wealth, and a lot of men don't either. But women in particular, I think, struggle to speak about their successes and their fortunes. They're more than happy to speak about philanthropy. And so, and there's some incredible, women who are giving away a lot of their wealth, to various charities and things. But yeah, I think, it'd be great to see more and more women, realize as well that it's okay to celebrate their success. And, it is called the Rich List, but it's also a celebration of, entrepreneurs in Australia and a sort of historical, record really of the types of businesses that have helped form our nation.
Finally, I couldn't ignore this quirky fact that 37 Johns have appeared on the list over the years. Andrew is another common name. Why do certain names seem to dominate our billionaire class? And do you think the rise of younger tech and AI founders, for example, can eventually change that traditional profile of the rich list?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think, as you sort of dig into these people and look back on the history of this list, which has been running for, quite a few decades now, there's some really kind of, quirky things that appear, whether it's star signs or, birthday months that sort of appear and you start seeing little patterns. And yeah, one of the things that caught my attention was just the names because, there's so many Johns and if, sometimes there's the patriarch of the family was John and then they'd call their son John and they'd call their son John and they'd call their son John. And so you end up with this, crazy list of Johns. And so that was just something that started to appear. And we did a little deep dive to see which of the names appeared more often. But I think you're right. I think there's a history actually of some, migrants in Australia changing their name to become more Australianised. So, their name might have been something different, but they've changed it to John or Michael because they felt they needed to sort of, fit in with Australian culture. And I think that is starting to change, and we're definitely going to see a much broader range of names and diversity as well. And yeah, you mentioned the younger generation and the tech entrepreneurs. I'm sure we're going to see some different names coming through, some quirkier sort of, millennial and Gen Z names as well.
That was AFR's Richlist Deputy Editor, Hannah Tattersall, and she wraps up today's podcast. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to give us a like and subscribe to SBS On the Money on Apple or Spotify. Thank you for listening. Ricardo will be back on Monday.
This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
Did you know that your Wi-Fi router could be limiting your internet speeds, especially if it's more than 5 years old? For setup tips on how to get the best out of your NBN connection, visit nbn.com.au/checkyoursetup.